Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shortalk. Joining us this week is a guy I've been missing for the last year or two and several months, Lee Merenka, who is a professor of political science, director of the Marist Institute of Public Opinion, or the well-known Marist Poll. It's been so long, Lee, and we thought you had gone so far uptown with what with NBC and all of these other prestigious places that you were never going to talk to us again, but here you are.
That would never happen. There is nothing higher than a half hour with Alan Shartok, okay? Not even Katz's Deli could compare to you.
Oh, boy, do I miss Katz's Deli. Okay.
You know, you can get it an order. They will deliver it to you right to your door.
In Great Barrington, they'll deliver it?
Yeah, you can get a whole thing. Yeah, very nice. So the question is, how have you been?
Oh, I'm doing fine. You know, I'm old now. I've gone very much over the hill.
No.
Do you think 80 is the new 90?
Yes, I also think 70 is the new 80, and then 80 is the new 90. And then we'll talk in a few decades and see how it's going. But, I must say, you know, as you probably know, every year around my birthday, we do ask the question, do you consider whatever my year is to be young, middle-aged, or old? And everything was good until this year when I turned the big 70, and the numbers fell apart, and I just don't know if I want to do that anymore. It used to be, when I was 38, it seemed like a funny thing to do about how a pollster comes to terms with middle age. Now I'm not so sure it's so funny.
Ah, well, I'm sure you'll have a poll question which will say, how do you feel about being whatever?
But we sound young. Our audience would have no idea what our age, that we're 150 between us. No one would know that.
Okay, let's go Lee Merenkoff, because you are the best of the pollsters, and we all know it. So just tell us what's going to happen in the New York City mayoral race.
Well,
I set you up, didn't I?
Some of your audience may be aware that New York City is right now putting in a new method of voting, which is called ranked choice voting. And so what you have is when you walk into the voting booth or vote early, whatever your desire is there, you get to vote for five people ranked ordered. So you vote for your first choice, your second choice, et cetera, up to your fifth choice. And then when the votes are tallied, New York City used to have a runoff, but it's sort of now being done in one foul swoop. So what they do is they take the lowest candidate of the 13 who are on the ballot, and that person's vote gets eliminated, and their second choice then becomes reallocated to the others, and so forth and so on until they get to somebody who has 50%. Now, the reality of this is if you're way down at the bottom, like at 1% or 2%, you know, it's not going to change the top numbers so dramatically. So someone who's in the 20s doesn't get anywhere near 50 until you start knocking off people in the real later rounds. And so we anticipate that this is going to go the full 12 rounds. It's like Ali Frazier back then. It's going to go the distance. How's that?
How many times do you actually vote? You vote one time? Is that the way it works?
You go in to vote once. You vote once, but you can vote for five people in ranked order. In other words, it would say, who's your first choice? Who's your second choice? Who's your third choice? And then each time you select a choice and it gets tallied that way, they take all the votes of all the choices and they see that, you know, Merenkoff is 13th. So they take off Merenkoff's, you know, eighth of a percent and give it to my second choice, which is Shartok. And now Shartok goes from 24 to 24 and an eighth. And then we move on to the next candidate, and we knock off, Carvalho, and she has 5%, and they go 3 to you and 2 to somebody else. And so we work up that way until we get someone to 50.
So let me ask you a political science-y sort of question. Number one, what about bullet voting? suppose I don't like anybody. I like my guy or my person, my woman in the group. So I vote only for that person. Is that a good strategy?
Yep. This we don't know. You're allowed to do that. So you can vote for one candidate and then say one and done and I'm out of here. And then your candidate, your vote counts only for that one time.
Right.
And then it's only when you get to that candidate. So if you happen to get the winner, you would be helping to put the person over the top. If you vote for any of the other 12, then your vote in effect get eliminated along the way and you would have no second choice. It facilitates if you have multiple preferences. You like this one, you like that one, you're sort of okay on this one, and then you work your way, and then you vote for multiples. And what we saw in our recent poll that we did is that about a quarter of the people are plan on voting for one and be one and done, and about a quarter of the people plan on going all five. And then somewhere in between, the other half are going to go for more than one, but not all five. So it's a real hodgepodge of choices. It's set up so that you can get, if you have multiple picks, you can get to make multiple choices. Surprisingly to me, and I think I'm anticipating your next question, surprisingly to me, the voters of New York City seem to be, in touch with this. There's been enough advertisements and enough discussion to get this group to understand what is going to be in front of them. What's interesting about it, of course, is that this is just likely Democratic primary voters that are going to be doing this. So it's a subset of a subset of a subset, which means it's maybe 15% of the city's registered vote Democrats are maybe going to vote. Turnout's likely to be low. But that's not because of this method. It's because of the fact that turnout's been really low in mayoralties lately. And so there's probably no reason why it would go up this time. So it's not the blame nor the credit to ranked choice voting. Maine does this, the state of Maine. It's becoming quite the craze around the nation in different localities. We're seeing it popping up as trying to democratize the process. You and I could debate whether that's happening or not. I'm not sure, but it is what's going to happen. People are voting absentee right now, and on the 22nd of this month, it will be the primary day, and we're going to see what happens at that point.
So here's my issue. If I'm for one of the leaders, Eric Adams, who's borough president in Brooklyn, and a former police officer in a time of great crisis in our cities where a lot of people are getting murdered. So let's just say he's the number one, and there has been some polling that shows him to be the number one.
Yes, he's the front runner right now.
Right. Now, if I know that and I want him, I'm going to vote for him and no one else. Why would I give anybody else a break?
Well, if you feel very strongly about him and only him, that is exactly what you strategically would do. You have the option to do other things. You're not required to do those other things. In fact, the candidates of the 13 who are running who have the most supporters who just say that candidate and no one else are Adams and Yang from presidential campaign fame. And those two candidates have the ones who have more voters who are just going to do one and done. The second and third place and fifth place people, Garcia, Wiley, and Stringer, have candidates, supporters who are likely to go multiple hits, and some of them to go the full distance. So, yes, the behavior is different. If you like someone really strongly and you really don't like the others, you might vote one and leave. One and done.
Okay, so Mr. Best Pollster in the world, which you are, let me ask you this. When you are looking at the way in which it's all coming down, how much do external events affect the way that people vote? I mean, just a little while ago, just to go on a little longer, we wanted to reform police departments, we wanted to take their power, we wanted to do this and that. Then come all the murders. So my question then, Lee, would be, are those murders, and is what is happening in our cities right now affecting the way in which people are going to vote?
I would say absolutely. And, you know, as we know, short-term events very often, especially the ones that occur close to Election Day, like the Comey letter back in 2016, 8 days out, and had effect on the Clinton-Trump contest. Yeah.
Sure.
So what you have in New York City going on, like you have it in a lot of parts of the country, and, you know, I'm not sure the reason for it, other than maybe people have been so pent up during the pandemic, and now they're kind of out there, and we knew there was going to be some, you know, mental health issues as a result of it. We're not doing anything about those. But we may be witnessing the impact of those on people in terms of the, you know, the shootings and the like. That may be a product of that. In any case, crime is a big deal in New York City. Adams is leading, as you said, he's a former policeman. He's currently Brooklyn Borough President. And he's in front. And what's interesting is, and this is where it really is, shocks me, you know, if I'm still shockable, is that the issue of crime is dominating, and it's driving out to the discussion of almost any other issue. Here you have a city that's just gone through the worst pandemic in, you know, probably in history. I don't know how the numbers compare to the a century ago when we had the other big pandemic, but certainly this was like, in modern times, in anybody's lifetime, the biggest single event from a healthcare standpoint. The city, as the rest of the country, went through this economic disruption unlike anything we've seen since the Great Depression. And now we're getting a race for mayor, the chief executive, coming right on the tail end of this horrible, tragic event. And in the last mayoralty debate, the word COVID or anything related to it was not even mentioned. The word never came up. They had five candidates on CBS television and CBS radio, and none of the candidates uttered one word that related to let's rebuild the city following this pandemic, or let's you know, make sure that, you know, there's mental health services following this pandemic, or anything else related to, you know, make sure you get your vaccine. We may have, you know, sort of won the battle, but the war is still going on. Anything like that. Not one word from any of the candidates. So, yes, I guess I'm still shockable, because I would think that if you're running against someone strategically who is kind of, you know, it's like you're ceding the issue of crime to the front runner when you should be out there providing your own vision, which may be a little broader for the economic redevelopment of the city. So that's a long answer to, yeah, crime is out there, and right now it's helping Adams. He has other issues that are increasingly chipping away at him.
A long and great answer, Lee Merengoff, ace pollster. So delighted that you are with us today. Okay, so I want to ask you a question. The Trumpistas, the Trump people, clearly are trying to shut down the advances in American voting, you know, early voting, more polling places. They're doing their best, I think. This is Alan Chartok, not Lee Berengoff, speaking. But will that register? In other words, based on your political science professorship, based on your polling, is that likely to make a change in the way people win or lose in these elections?
You know, I guess the Lee Merengoff political scientist editorial comment person says, I'm very worried about this. Let me go dial it back to January 6th and what happened in Washington at the Capitol. I was aghast at that. I think if I was a member of the House of Representatives or the Senate, and I came within a minute or so of being looking down the throes of this mob, I would think the first thing I'd want to do is make sure everybody who was involved in that was, you know, brought to justice, and that a full investigation was had as to why the Vice President of the United States called to get the help. And, you know, he sort of got the, I'm sorry, this line is not in service at this time. Please redial and you know, I mean, he got the cold shoulder. This is the Vice President of the United States whose life is in jeopardy and his family's life is in jeopardy. And the Senate and the House and the police people, many of whom got really banged up by this event. So that's a long answer to say there's a lot of people in this country who are agreeing with a lot of the Republican House and senators saying at this point that that was not a big deal. It's the old Marx Brothers line. You know, what are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? And here they're not believing their own eyes. We saw the tape. It's not like this is created. We all saw what happened. And it was just a horrible event. Having said that, this is part of what's going on in the country, in that there are clearly acts of attempts to suppress the vote. And I think that was going on in the election in 2020. I think the mail service was, you know, they were taking away, you know, fast sorters and, you know, the Trump appointees and the Postal Service were doing their best to make sure that things were going to be very difficult in certain areas. If you're a Democrat or Republican, you know where the votes are going to come from. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that if you go into the people of color in the urban areas and reduce the number of voting locations, extend the time it takes to vote, you know, make sure the mail ballots don't get there as quickly. You know what you're doing. If you go into the rural areas of Pennsylvania, on the western part of the state, and do the same thing, you would have an effect on the Republican vote because you know those are, you know, a red area. It's geographically, we're very segmented into red areas and blue areas, even more so than red states and blue states, which we're plenty divided about. So I guess I am very worried that this is occurring. I'm very worried that too many people are taking a back seat to what the realities of this. I think the Democrats are somewhat divided as to what to do about this. And the Republicans, you know, if they are many who don't like what's going on within their party, they're not the vocal majority. They're barely a whimper. And if I could just go back in time when we were sort of in graduate school or just starting out our lives as political scientists, you know, we had these parties which were loose coalitions. You know, the Democrats had a lot of conservative, you know, white Southern senators, and they would filibuster civil rights legislation. And the Republican Party had conservatives, but they also had what then were called Rockefeller Democrats. Right in the town that you spend so much time in Albany, and so you had, and we said those, like, boy, if we could just get parties that were more pure, that were more ideologically, you know, whole, less heterogeneous, then things would move more substantively in the nation. We'd have one party stand for one set of things, another party stand for another set of things, and, you know, as they say, be careful what you wish for, because we sort of have that now. And it's not working. We ended up with a, you know, a 50-50 nation and a real stalemate on our hands and all the frustration that follows as a result of that. So, yeah, so this is, I think, very problematic. And I'm not quite sure what we're going to be facing in 2022 and in 2024 and whether the vote of American people in our democracy is going to be added up, counted, and, you know, certified in keeping with the way people actually vote. And gosh, I hate to even use that sentence. I mean, it's scary.
No, I agree with you completely. Let me ask you this, Lee Marengoff, ace pollster, Marist poll. The question to me is, how will your polling be affected by all of these changes?
No, that's another in a long line of excellent questions. Yeah, so we can only measure what people's intentions are. We cannot measure what happens to people's votes. And I felt that in the last election, and I don't remember whether we talked about this last time or not. I think we might have, but anyway, the polls could both have been right and wrong at the same time. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean we may have actually measured public opinion as it was intended, but if people's votes weren't all being counted, and I don't mean because it was rigged or any of that, I think there may have been some problems with the mail. There was a delay in some states where the mail did not get into the pool. We can only measure what public opinion is and what people's voter intentions are. If, in fact, we get to a situation where people show up to vote and find the equivalent of the Jim Crow laws of an earlier era are back in form, or if there's some kind of suppression or long lines, few votes, they don't have the right identification that's now required that they didn't know they had to now require. If we get all that, yeah, the polls might overstate what is going to occur among Democrats, and they may not turn out to have the many votes as thought. And then you get to the process of whether right now in 2020, a lot of Republican secretaries of state and local board of election officials stuck by their guns and said, no, like in Georgia, this is what really happened. The vice president of the United States said, no, I have to certify according to the Constitution. I can't just do what some people banging on the doors of the Capitol want me to do. So, the polls could have, we have enough trouble measuring things accurately, but we can only measure as accurately as the behavior reflects people's attitudes. And if, in fact, the count is off in some way, then, the polls will be off. It doesn't have to be, a 10-point swing, because polls are estimates anyway. So we're working within a range to begin with, but that could be altered as a result of things occurring not above board. I'm more concerned about the democracy, incidentally, than I am about the accuracy of the polls. Although both are very much on front of mind right now.
Good for you, Lee. I couldn't agree more. Let me go to abortion. Have you picked up any changes in the way that the American people feel about whether illegal abortions should proceed? Because we have a Supreme Court, which is obviously going to do something negative. If you are a believer in abortion, we'll do something negative about it. What are you finding?
The findings are that American attitudes are more diverse than some of what the polls show or what the politicians believe. And by that, I mean, if you ask a question which says, are you pro-choice or pro-life, you're going to get a very divided nation. If you ask a question that has five or six choices in it, ranging from, abortion is a right totally up to the individual, or abortion on the other extreme can, be outlawed under any circumstances, including rape and incest, you're going to get, and then if you have the gradations in between, you're going to find that a lot of people have, fall somewhere within those extremes. And that gets lost in the discussion, as with so many other issues, because the opportunity to voice your opinion is not, doesn't reflect it. So you would say, if I gave you the choice between pro-choice and pro-life, you would say one, but your actual attitude may be a little more blended than that. So yes, I think right now the Supreme Court, although it's acted in unusual ways so far, I mean, I think there's been some votes that surprise people, but yes, that seems to be on the docket. And it reflects a broader sense of, not only with the Supreme Court, where the Republican presidents have picked many, many more justices relative to their times they've been in the White House than the Democrats. Some of that has been by design, with Mitch McConnell obviously not ceding Obama's last pick, but making sure that, the Trump final pick made it through with a week to go. That's one part of it. But the other part is that just by circumstance alone, the Republicans have been in the White House, although less time than the Democrats, they've had the opportunity to make many more picks on the bench. That may happen again with Justice Breyer, and whether he decides to retire or stays in, and then what happens to the White House or the Senate in 2022 or in 2024. Plus, we have a country right now where the Democrats are winning the majority of the vote for president on a repeated basis, with every time in the last couple of decades, with the exception of 2004, when Kerry lost to Bush. But despite winning a majority of the vote, they're not winning it in the right states that they need to win it in, and as a result, they have you know, they're not winning the Electoral College every time. In fact, we've had two instances where the opposite has occurred, 2000 and 2016, where the Democrats won the majority of the vote, but the Republicans took the White House. And we see it in the Senate itself, where, you know, the Senate, the Democratic senators represent lots of more people than the Republican senators do. But because of the fact that red states tend to be more, that the Republican states tend to be less in population, less densely populated, that, you know, you have more South Dakotas with two Republican senators than you do California with two Democratic senators. And obviously the populations are very, very much different. So we have a, we're in an odd place right now where we have a minority number of people dominating all three branches of our government, from the White House to the Congress, to the Supreme Court. So,
Lee, I only got three more minutes and less than that. I wanted to ask you real quickly. I want to know what you're finding about Cuomo. The common wisdom right now is that Cuomo is going to win the election despite all of his troubles. Is your polling showing that?
We haven't done anything recently. My guess is we know that fourth terms are hard. He knows that more than anybody, given his father's weakness during that time. We don't know yet. His approval rating is decent, but people aren't willing to grant him the right to run for re-election. They're going to look it over, look over the field. The question is the field worthy, either from a Democratic primary standpoint or a Republican challenger? We don't know.
And we do know that George Pataki somehow won when nobody knew who the heck he was at the time. Let me ask you this. What's the Poll Hub podcast?
It is a weekly podcast, and I'm glad you asked. That was, we put out at Marist, myself with Barbara Carvalho and Jay DeDapper. It's executive produced by Mary Griffith on our team, and we sometimes have guests, sometimes not, and we try to peel back the curtain on some of the inside issues of polling as it relates to politics and vice versa. Not unlike what we're talking about here, except there's more voices than just mine, and probably more intelligent discussion than I can offer, but I try my best.
You are the best. We've been talking to our wonderful friend, Lee Merengoff, who is generally regarded as the best pollster in America, the Marist Poll. And I have to say, it's a great pleasure because I believe our conversations have led to your tremendous success.
Well, a lot of people, believe it or not, Alan, listen to you on a regular basis. I know that because whenever we do the program, I hear from them saying, heard you with Alan Chartok. And you keep it on, too, because it has been for decades you've been a voice of reason in our area and just a voice of information, even if it isn't reasonable all the time.
You are the best. We've been talking to Lee Merengoff, the head of the Marist College Poll, has some wonderful colleagues that he works with. Anyway, Lee Merengoff, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My thanks, Alan. Appreciate it very much.